नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Welcome to Bhakti Essentials Part 5. I can't believe it, but yes, we are together already for 5 sessions. For those of you who have joined us now for this session, I would like to again introduce our presentations. They serve 2 types of audiences. One is the audience who just wants to find out what is bhakti and maybe spark their spiritual journey. The second type of audience is the audience which is already practicing bhakti but who is interested to lay strong foundations for their spiritual journey in bhakti. Up till now, we have presented 4 subjects. We started with the subject of identity, who we are. We went then next to divinity, what is above all of us, around all of us, underneath all of us, the divine context. Then we spoke about what is bhakti, as bringing the two together. And the last time we dealt with the deities of bhakti. Now all these 4 subjects come into what you call sambandha in Sanskrit. It means something which binds you, but not in the way we experience bondage in this world. It connects you or holds you into in a spiritual context, and it keeps you there. In a way, you could say this type of knowledge gives you the foundation from which you can act with strength. And it also, if you so want, gives you a good protection against negativity of all sorts. Foundational knowledge, sambandha, is the first step, and it leads into what we will start to discuss today, the practice. If you have a practice which is on strong foundations, oh, you can go very far in your practice. The second part, practice, is called abhidheya. And today we will look at something which totally inspires me. It's the mantras and kirtans which are used in bhakti. I must tell you, I'm personally very, very interested in holding this session for all of you, because it connects me also with what I would like to say the most strongest forces in bhakti, the most strongest methods and practices which can, when properly understood, bring you into what is called yoga, a connection, a union with the divine. And mantras and kirtans are having the first place, really. Let us start to talk about mantras. Mantras have power inside. The easiest way to understand these powers or potencies in mantras is if we look at the two syllables which compose the word mantra. First there is man, it means the mind. And then there is tra, which is the short form of triyati, it means to deliver. Mantras have the power to deliver the mind from unwanted occupation. Hold on, you may say, a little bit slower, please. What do you consider in the bhakti tradition as an unwanted occupation of the mind? Something which, in a way, could be called an obsessive thinking or repeated pattern which you want to become free of. Let us approach this question from the neuroscientific point of view. The point of view which works with the measurements of the brain waves. The yoga tradition has a traditional point look on the view on the mind, where it speaks or lists the unwanted occupation of the mind as sufferings, as kleshas, which bring misery upon us, internal existential misery. They speak of ignorance, they speak of false ego, of attachments you can't get rid of, but you need to get rid of in order to move on. They speak of another unwanted occupation, that is aversion and material absorption. But I wish to look at the mind today through the looking glass of modern science. See, there are four default activities of the mind. Things which happen without you wanting it. These can be measured by just hooking the brain to a machine and then which measures brain waves. The first default occupation which the brain goes forward to is the inner commentator. It's that voice which creates an opinion and constantly comments on anything and everything that's going on. Oh, it labels it. This is good. Ah, this is unpleasing, and so on. Now, the problem with this inner commentator is these are mostly negative comments. Ah, look at them. Look at the situation. Oh, the weather is not good today. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's so this and that. And usually, when we speak of this unwanted inner commentator, which is not like a neutral camera, but which always has some judgment in it, it focuses on what is going wrong or should be improved, or what leaves us with a feeling of dissatisfaction and frustration. The second automatic occupation that is going on is the time traveler. What's that, the time traveler? Well, our mind thinks of everything except what is going on now. It thinks of the past, for instance. It ruminates on, oh, if things would have happened differently in the past, then everything would be so much easier in my life. Or the mind moves forward in time into the future. In the future, I will have holidays. Or in the future, I'm sure that I will meet people who are better to me. Or in the future, I will find pleasure by finally looking at a good movie, which I have not yet found. The mind is traveling into the future, hoping that some satisfaction is going on. If your mind is always in the past, what went wrong, or even what went good, good memories, which you have in old age, oh, when I was young, I could run around like this. Of your mind is always in the future. That's a problem, because life happens in the here and now. You have to learn to be present where it is. The third default activity of the brain, the mind, is it's the others analyst. It will look at others and compare itself with others. Many times, if you look very, very accurately, the mind looks at the examples of others who are so much in on a different level that comparison with them and their achievements will bring us misery, because we intuitively feel we can't reach there. It's good to have good examples. It's good to have ideals. It's good, as the Bhaktas say, to follow in the footsteps of the saints. But if you compare yourself and find out, oh no, I'm not so good as they are, then you are digging a hole of misery where you will fall into. The other analyst wonders also what others think about ourselves and focuses on things that makes us different from other. This analyst brings us always to the same end. We feel lonely, misunderstood, and ill at ease. This brings us to a similar function, the self-reviewer. The self-reviewer is different from the previous one, the one who compares itself, by always going into its narrative, its story, the roles which one has established for himself, and the place, our name that we have now, our fame, who we would like to be, and holding on to these endless self-narratives, which are only stories. We want the mind to wake up from this, to, so to say, walk out of the story of life that does not serve us any longer. All these four default modes of the mind and the brain, to which it always switches back, have one problem in common. The problem we already looked at. We are not here in the now, in the present, but we are occupied with stories, with narratives, with interpretations, with ultimately illusions. Either it is the inner commentator, the time traveler, the one who analyzes others, or the one who always analyzes oneself by comparing it with others, but mostly by being stuck in a story, are unwanted occupations of the mind. And mantras can, in a short time, as we will hopefully see when we make an exercise in a few minutes, mantras can take us right out of there into what I will deal with in my next book, the inner stillness, where there is a lot of positive things going on in the stillness. Mantras can bring us onto a level where we find relief and where we have a good overview of what is really happening, not the filters which we, our mind puts before it. So, on one level, the mantra engages the mind. It calms it, it frees us. It may be a short, brief syllable, but this syllable acts like a key, a little key, which can free us. There may be an iron door, which is very thick, and it is very, very tightly shut. But if you have a little tiny key, you bring this into the keyhole, and you can open the door and walk out into wherever you want to walk next to. So this is one power of the mantra. It calms and it frees us. What is very important for me to share with all of you is that the mantra doesn't create something. The mantra connects you with what is already there. I couldn't express it better than one of my friends who is a yoga teacher and who said, when I meditate, a feeling of inner calm comes automatically to me. It's not something I strive for. It's something that is already there. We just have to allow it to be a little bit more present. A very good definition of what happens when you chant mantra. It just connects you with that state of calm, that natural state for the mind when it is not agitated by the previous mentioned default habits or other disturbing situations. To chant a mantra, however, does much more than just calming and thus freeing the mind. I gave a few days ago a session about the untold secrets of meditation. And I would like to repeat from that session what is the really amazing power of mantra, a power which maybe comes as a surprise to all of you, because I can imagine many of you have already some contact with mantras. The mantra fireizes you. Now, what does that mean? I would like to give you the traditional example from which this expression comes. Imagine you place a cold iron rod into fire. At that time, a transference of energy takes place so that the iron now is hot or becomes hot, glowing hot, and it also gives off a light. It shines. It's no longer really cold iron any longer. It is fireized. It carries the shakti or the energy of the fire. And this happens when you chant mantras. You become mantrarized or fireized, or let me say, imbued with a spiritual energy which was not there before and which now enlivens you and brings you something like a deep spontaneous insight. There is the warmth and also the light in you. The warmth could be that energy, and light could be the insight which you get. This is mentioned in the things. This Shakti can also remove traces of old karma. Have you noted that sometimes you try to change, but you seem to slip back into modi of operandi, that is, ways of acting that you really don't want, but boom, you go back to it and you say, why did I quarrel? Why did I say this? Why did I do this again? Yes, karma. Very strong old impressions which are there. A mantra that has a genuine spiritual essence, a divine potency, can take you out of this. However, only if you know the two cardinal rules of chanting mantra. First, when you chant mantras, you strive for absorption. Second, you strive for the right intention. You need to become absorbed in the sense of really entering the vibration of the mantra. Let it be there in your heart. Let me give you an example. The place where I live is about 60 kilometers away from Berlin, and I can go there very comfortably by entering the local train. So when I stand on the platform and the train comes, I need to now not sleep. I need to get into the train. And those who know how to ride trains know you have to catch the right moment. In the same way, when the mantra comes, filled with divine potency, you need to enter it. You need to become absorbed. Second rule is intention. You can use mantras, or mantras will work its power when you set the intention in a way. We have a little ashram by the lake and there are sailing boats. Now, those who sail catch the wind in their sails, but then they need to steer the boat. In the same way, when we chant mantras, we come in contact with their divine power. And now we need to see, where do we want to go? What is our intention, or in Sanskrit, sankalpa, that will utilize the tremendous potency to push or to move our life forward in the desired direction. I think I have said enough about mantras, and the two rules and chanting them, so that now we can start to go and to actually making an experience. But to summarize my point, I would like to tell you a secret which Mahatma Gandhi found out. He chanted every day the mantra Ram. And he said he owed his tremendous inner strength that helped him to overcome obstacles in his life and his political endeavors due to that strength which the mantra gave him. He said something really beautiful, which I found and which empowered his non-violent movement, which practically changed the whole political landscape of India, the India he lived in. He drove what was so powerful with his movement that he could ultimately drive out the foreign rule of the Britishers and give India its independence. In his own words, he said, the mantra becomes one's staff of life that carries one through every ordeal. Each repetition has a new meaning. Each repetition carries you nearer and nearer to God. Let us make an experience now. I would like to chant with all of you the most well-known mantra, the Om, and do this with you in this way which we have discussed. One should, says Patanjali, chant this with full concentration and a one-pointedness. The Sanskrit is ekagrata. Ek means one. One-pointed mind during the practice. Let us start. I request you to find a comfortable sitting place. I assume you have, but maybe some of you were busy. Sit down. It won't be too long. And sit erect. Cushion or on the floor or chair, both are equally all right, but we aim for a straight sitting posture. When you are ready, center yourself and close your eyes. Inhale and exhale deeply. Please continue to breathe in and out. And focus on your breath, trying to lengthen it a little bit. If the mind wanders, as it is apt to do, just bring it back to the breathing. In and out, just breathing. Breathing becomes the anchor of our mind. When you are ready, chant Om in a calm and controlled way. I will do it one time alone, and then we will do it 5 times together. Stay a little bit in this space and just observe what has happened. To conclude the session, I request you to one more time chant the Om. I will give you a signal, and this time try to vibrate a little bit with your closed mouth on the M, a long M where you close the mouth. Deep inhale. How was that for you? From mantras, I would like to take you to the benefit of what we could call a group singing and a group meditation called Kirtan, the second powerful practice for this evening. In Kirtan, one sings mantras to the accompaniment of musical instruments in a call and response fashion. A lead singer sings and we hear and then sing back. By the singing of especially divine names, with many like-minded people, the potency of the mantras only increases. This holds true especially to divine names which are related to a particular deity, and in fact become the deity in full. They are non-different from the deity. And when one intonates such mantras or divine names, one really invokes the deity in full. And by singing together, the potency of the mantra, which is reflected, so to say, in the heart of the others, increases. It is like if I bring a mirror to the lamplight, then the light increases in potency. And especially if you have many mirrors, many hearts, many people who sing there with full attention and absorption, and you will see, whoa, there's a lot of spiritual light going on. I hope I didn't, make an unpleasant feeling for your eyes. I still remember when I went in the late 80s after Glasnost and Perestroika to Russia, and we had been invited to give a cultural program with Indian music, meditation music, multi-vision shows of places in India like Kumbh Mela. We had traditional dance, and in the end a big kirtan concert where many, many people took part. You should have seen, there are videos of that, what went on with the people. They came to an extraordinary state of mind. They sang, being infused by the potency of the divine names. They climbed on each other, but not just one on top of the other. This was sometimes three. I saw them as tsunami waves of people coming towards the stage. It was so high. It was a wave of humanity which was energized by the extraordinary power of the mantra. I remember there was various journalists and who said this kirtan, singing of the divine names, is the new religion for Russia. It's not a new religion, it's a universal spiritual practice, but it has a lot of power, and it the power acts in two ways. It goes inside and it goes also outside. In other words, you might feel inclined to dance. It engages all your senses. That's why it's so powerful. The ear hears, the tongue chants, the eyes see the many, or it doesn't have to be always many people. The kirtan can be done also with five people, and often you focus while you do kirtan on a picture of a divinity, and it even engages the nose. Often the incense which are offered in puja and in a ceremony, they find their way in kirtan performances. For the full kirtan experience to happen, however, I would like to also offer three advices. Focus, then don't hold back, and then let go. Just like with mantras, you should focus on the divine sound. Then don't hold back. One shouldn't be shy in eating, the Linga Purana says, and in kirtan. Full engagement. And then let go. Let the kirtan do everything. Let it carry you forward. These are three advices which I would like to do. I would like to now sing a kirtan with you. Radha Govinda Radhe. Just brief, try to do what we suggested to you. Focus. Then don't hold back. Sing nicely. And then finally let go. Radha Govinda Radhe. Radha Govinda Radhe. Your turn. Radha Govinda Radhe. Radha Govinda Radhe. Radha Govinda Radhe. Radha Govinda Radhe. Please sing. Radha Govinda Radhe. 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 My dear audience, Kirtan should go a little on a little longer. Typically you find Kirtan concerts which extend over 2 hours or so. Sometimes there are Akhanda Kirtans. They extend over a whole day. There are 3 days Kirtans. They go on day and night. And always the same experience is there. When one focuses and does not hold back, does not sink back in the narrative of the mind, so to say, and lets just the divine names carry you on. Much like the train or the airplane, then you can come to an extraordinary state of consciousness where you have deep insights into very advanced levels. Not only insight, where you experience them really. This is an old poem. It says, with every rising and setting of the sun, your days pass. Why then do you still remain idle and not worship the Lord of your heart. Material life is temporary. Take shelter of the divine names earnestly. Sing again and again. And drink the divine name's pure nectar, thus giving relief to your burning heart. So many times we do things with our hands and our hearts does not understand why. Mantra and kirtan can only be experienced in full by practice. I wish to encourage you in my closing remarks to practice mantra chanting and kirtan. But before I do this, I want to make one brief announcement. We will post the recording of the guided meditation which we did this evening tomorrow morning, Wednesday, on my Facebook page. And I have an extended chanting of Om. What we did today was very good. It was the first level of chanting Om. But what you will see in the mantra session, guided session, is level 2. It will bring you to yet other divine experiences. It's a traditional way of chanting Aum. I will leave you with tips and exercises which you can daily do, and these we will place also on the Facebook so that you can review them again. My first advice or suggestion, I would better like to say, is to chant the Om upon awakening, first thing in the morning. When you get up and maybe sit still on your bed, chant Om, and do this also as the last thing in the day. Then you frame your day with a divine sound vibration. My spiritual master said, Om, or the pranava, is the seed of transcendental realizations. By its chanting, one is able to bring the mind fully under control when it's materially absorbed. And this is the way of changing the habit of the mind, this default states. No? Then I would like to request you to sing kirtans either on your own. You can just sing this one or other kirtans, or look up in the internet in the kirtan web pages for good kirtans which you appreciate. And then why not dance maybe in your room? Dance more to the sound of the kirtans. Lastly, if you would like to know how to do a japa meditation on the Maha Mantra, you can go to a link which I will request my technical assistants to put now on this web page, or on this whatever it is, Instagram or Facebook, or from wherever you look. It describes you how to this contemplative mantra chanting. And last and not least, I'm a little bit in a hurry to end on time, is I would very much appreciate you to see you for our next Bhakti Essential Sessions Part 6 on, let me look here, on August 11 at 8 p.m. Central European time. We will have all together 8 sessions, so we are almost through now, and it would be nice if I can't really see you, but I assume that you are there, and God. All what needs to be said is, Kalyanho, may only the best things happen to you in this week. And please do look up these tips so that you can practice during the week and in this way ready yourself for the next session. Thank you all very much. All the best for you.